You are listening to a production of the Toll Network, home of biting analysis. This is Uncommon Cast RX-146, Grim and Giddy.
I'm Ayla, the thesis-seeking critic. Do I drink?
I'm Amit, the heart-snacking critic. Do I drink?
And I'm Sono, the fun-loving critic. Do I drink?
Putting heroes on trial. Critical Squadron.
Join us as we take a critical eye to Kamen Rider Ghost. Will Takeru save himself and the Kamen Rider franchise in the 36 days he has left on this blue planet? Find out how we think he's doing as we pass judgment on Kamen Rider Ghost 35, Evolution, the Power of Fun.
Our writer was Mori Nobuhiro, our director Yamaguchi Kyohei, our action director Miyazaki Takeshi, all people that we have covered in the past.
Yes, this is true. Let's go ahead and get right into the focus. I'll start us off. What came into focus for me on this episode was, like, at the end, Akari's comments about, Takeru being this writer of light and, this writer who fights with his emotions. It's kind of like a weird way to frame things, but I guess from her perspective of this really being the only writer she's experienced, I mean, besides, Makoto and Elaine.
Depending on the movie, she might have met Drive, poor girl, and maybe Hongo.
Yeah, I guess that's
true.
Look,
if you met Hongo, like, you would need to give Takeru a special designation. She's like, look, yeah, clearly he's a Kamen Rider, but he needs a modifier, because that dude is straight up Kamen Rider.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. So I can see where she would want to make the distinction. I mean, well, she's a scientist. She has to classify things, you know?
That's true, yeah. Taxonomies are very important.
I kind of see that, like, maybe the focus over the next bit of the show is going to be, like, balancing emotions in order to do well with stuff. And I think that's a far-reaching theme in the show. Like, if you remember how Takeru would phase out of sight when he was low and unsure of himself in the very beginning of it. So then, like, the professor struggles and Akari dubbing Takeru the Rider of Light, and all that went with it. Makes me think that, like, willful finding of balance will be a broad thrust for the show. And I'm repeating myself a little, but this is just how my thoughts flowed. So, these last two episodes did a good job of focusing on joy as a medium to bring people together and find the strength to endure. I particularly enjoyed that finding the strength to fight on for the sake of happiness and with a joyful spirit was divorced from being a hot-blooded hero. TM. Because, you can do it and just be cool about it, and I like that Takeru's doing that.
I felt this episode did kind of a nice job paralleling the Grimms, who are focused in literary arts, and the Professor Brothers, who are focused in very physical science. I think it's nice that the show put these two fields on equal ground in this kind of very subtle way, but it's like, these two things are happening to these two groups of people, even if they're in very different fields, and they have to learn to deal with it, and kind of make amends with it. It's kind of this message of no matter what you love, science or whatever, you can get burnt out on it, and sometimes you need to step back and find a way to remember what it is that made you love what you're doing. And there's kind of this nice feeling of using that to connect with others who share that same passion and using that to help you stay enthusiastic and to spread that enthusiasm to other people who might enjoy it.
Yeah, I got a lot of the same things. My sort of a slight detraction, because I really dig on the idea that what makes a thing worth doing is not like about your monetary and social rewards, though. Look, let's be real. It's great when you can get them. But about finding things that matter to you. Like, doing science for its own sake? Nah. But doing science because you want to discover, learn, inspire, or some other feeling that you're craving? That's what it's all about. And then they use this thing of finding... Well, I mean, they translate it as fun, but that seems kind of a simple word for what they seem to be talking about to me. Like, I don't speak Japanese, and I'm wondering if there might be a tweak to that, to the word they use. Because I was watching it, I kept feeling like joy or bliss, you know, as in follow your bliss, might have been a better way to do it. I don't know. That's me getting fiddly, and you want to talk about taxonomies. Like, no, words mean things. Nah, literary, linguistic prescriptivism. I don't know. Like, it could very well be translated right. It felt clunky in this context. But I'm just happy that the show is just saying, look, finding personal fulfillment is important, because so often we focus on, like, make money, responsibilities. I'm like, look, I'm not saying those are bad. Don't get it twisted. But finding personal fulfillment in a thing has worth in and of itself, and I was really glad that the show was wanting to talk about that.
Okay. So, let's go ahead and move on to the bones. I had actually kind of a lot of problems for an episode that I enjoyed overall, but here I go. The aftermath of that elation stream in Dreamland was about as clear as mud, and that was from the beginning of the episode. I was happy that it showed that Liquid had escaped, but I didn't know what else happened there, and that was kind of frustrating. But, you know, maybe it's Dreamland and I should give it a pass and stop being so particular. I don't know. Takeru and Ari and the professor were placed in these lady roles against their will, and it feels like it kind of was maybe supposed to be depowering or mocking or something to them, and if that's the case, I don't like it. I don't think I like KMS being turned around in Akari via the Igor-influenced Grimm icon. It just didn't sit right with me, again. And then I have an actually for the creatives on Ghost.
Okay.
The Grimm Snow White has nothing to do with the Disney version, and while I love that dress, like, honestly, it's like my favorite princess costume. Anyway, it is a glaring inaccuracy that really bothers me. They could have had her standing next to a bear-suited Gonmuk or a pair of rose bushes, that were white and red, and like that would have worked, because in the original story, she marries a guy who got turned into a bear, and he has a brother who was also turned into a bear by dwarves who are the enemy, and she and her sister,
Rose Red,
live with their mom in the middle of the forest, and because they show kindness to the bears, or to the one bear, anyway, and, like, the dwarves are the evil ones. It's, like, a whole thing. So, like, as a person who's read this Grimm fairy tale and several other Grimm fairy tales, it was disappointing that they just went with, like, the Disney version, because it's not the same.
I'm just wondering if their priority was, we need children to recognize that this is Snow White.
You're probably right.
And look, you cannot underestimate the power of the mouse. I mean, look, I'm right with you, because, look, my every time I see someone talking about it, and they're, like, talking about the Disney version as if that's the canonical, as if that's the Grimm version, I'm like, okay, but...
And, like, I feel like the literary in me is totally on there with you. Like the practical end of this being aimed at like the 10 to 12 set, and how many of them would actually
5 minutes for that bit.
Not even. It's like you're focused on her for like a minute at most.
Yeah.
While she over the course of the time she's in that costume. So I think it's mostly a recognizability thing instead of a complete conflation.
I think that's a fair point. It's just, it really bugs me.
Because you're a nerd, and that's what we're about.
This is true. Like, I gotta say, I'm glad in Hercules he didn't murder his family, like in the Disney movie. Like, that's great.
Yeah.
That's a great version of Hercules.
I wouldn't go that far, but I am glad that it did not feature, you know, family annihilation.
You know, and hey, right. Like, Zeus did not sleep with anyone.
Implicitly, all the people he slept with were happy to be doing it.
Yeah.
Zeus is kind of an awful
deity. Zeus is the actual worst.
Yeah.
And, like, Hades is generally pretty chill.
I mean, at least, over in the Norse mythology, like, okay, there's a problem. Okay, who caused it? Loki. How can we fix it? Loki. Great!
And, like, Hera didn't try to murder anything that was female. So, you know.
That's pretty cool.
All in all, good version to present to children.
Yeah, I can see why they went that way.
Alright, so, other than that, let's see. Okay, so we don't get to see Igor in his standard, superior, Ganma superior form with the silver hoodie enough. And, like, that's really disappointing, because that's a cool look, and it stands out. And it's just like he's in it for a second sometimes. It's not even consistently that he's in that. Sometimes he's without it, and he just pops in an icon into his little arm reader thing, so... and then my last thing. In the expanded flashback, we see Takeru and Ryu with Ken and Makoto and Akari, but no mom. I'm sure his mom would have been there, and it's sad that she isn't.
We really need more information on his mom, because all I'm getting is his mom was gone a very long time. Like, she died or left or whatever caused her to not be there, like, when he was real, real little. And that is sad, and I want to know what's up with it. For me, though, I felt it was really weird how science was treated in this episode. Like, it's just one big thing that you can get sick of. Like the one professor's going around collecting bugs, and I know he's in this, like, child, like, bug-catching outfit, and he's, you know, reconnecting with, you know, his childhood self, but entomology is a thing. And I feel like Jiro is just tired of physics and, you know, wants to do something else. There's like a billion branches of science, and it seems weird how if he got, like, slightly discouraged by one, but, like, his greatest desire is to go around catching bugs, which is, you know, basically its own scientific field. It's just treated as if he's given up on science.
Well, it's, you know, it's hard to get a research grant to go out and collect bugs on your own.
I mean, yeah, especially if you're a
vicious field. Yeah.
I mean, like, it's treated like he's giving up on science in general when it's just like, okay, but, you know, have him just go read about bugs. Have him go to some lectures about this other thing. Have him take a week off and just collect bugs for fun.
Let that poor kid go on sabbatical.
On that, like, these two started a children's science museum? Are they not still involved in it? Why not just have Jiro, like, take a break and work there playing with kids on days that he's not teaching his class? And just, you know, have some fun with science until he's, you know, feeling chill enough to go back to his experiments. There's literally this fun thing right here that he enjoys doing. Why is he not doing it?
Yeah, that's odd.
Like, did the Children's Science Museum, like, close down? Like, what?
Maybe they've been so busy doing other research?
They don't explain why suddenly, like, they had this children's science thing, and then they just stopped doing it. There's this... After the first God Omega Drive that Takeru does, there's this big splash of water that hits both him and the Liquid Gon Miser. And it's really... I just started laughing a lot at how completely unflinching they were. Because it's just someone throwing a bucket of water on these two suits. Like, it cuts to Liquid, someone throws a bucket of water. It cuts to Mugen, someone throws a bucket of water. And it's kind of... It's positive because I thought it was really funny, but that was definitely not the tone they were going for. So I put it in bones because that is not what they wanted, I am positive. Also, I'm still disappointed that Akari didn't slap Igor. Like, yeah, she had to get her teacher to safety, but that didn't stop her with the high school girl. Like, Akari, just go beat him up. I know you want to.
Yeah, and I'm with you on that. I mean, Come on, they're nemeses. Let her scoff at his absurdity as often as possible, and then show her... Well, okay, like I was about to say, show her moral superiority by hitting someone, and that's not cool. I admit, it's just petty schadenfreude. I really just like seeing him just whack, just take down a peg. Because, like, look, he's a big, powerful guy. He's got superpowers. She has science. Which, look, let's not get it twisted. Science is impressive. But anyway, I think the only other thing that you guys haven't covered and that I haven't butted in on because I'm such a great co-host is, look, Onari's hair, pretty short for a Rapunzel. Like, he was selling it. Like, he was tilting his head. Like, he was dragging this great weight. So, like, look, it's not on the actor. Just that the costume department, like, they could have bought one new wig. On the other hand, I mean, they'd lose that wig immediately because, like, they aren't going to use it again. It's going to get tangled up and messed up, and they're going to have to pay someone to clean it out. And I know Toei's not going to do that. And besides, I imagine, like, Toei audits their costume budget pretty heavy, and this was a pretty costume-heavy episode to begin with. So, look, I get it. I'm just like, you couldn't have done something else like Sleeping Beauty. I mean, I guess Rapunzel is funny because he's bald, but...
Yeah, and they get to then make the comment that, you know, his hair used to be that long.
That's true, yeah.
Though I'm still not completely certain on Jiro as, I believe, Cinderella, where they make a comment that his heels were, like, 23 centimeters, which is, like, a foot.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
I'm like, no, his heels are 2 inches at best.
Like, and if they were that kind of, like, he'd need, like, platform heels.
Yeah, like, I have seen heels in the, like, 6 to 8 inch range, and believe me, he would have died. He would not have been able to run around in those.
I thought they were giving his foot size and just saying, like, oh, look at this Cinderella. Look how huge his feet are.
I may have misread it, but I felt like it was saying that the heel of the shoe was 23 centimeters.
Well, it certainly went by in a flash, so I can understand.
But yeah, I think that's it for me.
Okay, so let's get on into womans then. My first one is, I suppose Elaine getting to Mark Onari's face is like some form of comeuppance, and I'm not thrilled about it, but I guess it's okay. And then, like, the long hair thing on Onari's little splash card, like, to me, that's affirming his punk past, so, like, you guys should be pretty happy about that.
I really just want to find out that he was just super into, like, black metal in the 80s. That would make me so happy.
Yeah, he could have gone metal with that hair.
Corpse paint the whole 9 yards.
Lots of mayonnaise, get it to stand straight up.
Well, that would be back to punk, but yeah, anyway.
Oh, you're right. So then, like, Professor Yuichi was like, oh man, my feet hurt. And I just thought, like, yeah, you probably don't wear heels often, because you're a stickler. So, like, I'm sure your feet are hurting, and I thought that was cute. They reused props from Trash Food Telheim, and or at least I think they did, in a lot of the decor for the, you know, the fairy tale forest, and I thought that was pretty good.
That's true. Yeah. Well, look, I'm glad we got one good thing out of Guy.
I didn't notice because I think I've blocked most of that from my memory. And also because they kept, like, blurring and overlapping shots every time they went to Helheim, so I couldn't really tell what anything looked like.
Well, there you go. That was part of the key to success for them. Well, never mind. And then I was tickled by the Gonmuk dwarves because they were bad. And in the original story, the dwarves are bad, but they're dressed like the 7 dwarves. So, like, that was cool. Let's see. So, like, Fairy Tale Dreamland was neat, and it was cool that Igor used Grimm to make it happen. I just think that's, like, a really interesting idea.
Yeah.
It would be fun to see the icon used to, like, do tricks and stuff on people, on enemies. That'd be neat. But, I mean, it happened here, but it's just Elaine doesn't use it like that, so.
He doesn't really have a poet's soul, because, like, look, Igor is messed up, but he is great at planning and messing and being a cynical jerk. Uh-huh. Like, he has some poetry in him, is what I'm saying. Like, he is good enough to realize, hey, Mozart, Ganma, that music isn't good enough. Fine, I'm going to go hang out with QB forever. Peace.
And they don't seem to want to use the CGI budget on Elaine. Ever.
Poor guy, yeah. Well, he does sometimes, like, his suit, like, the green parts, like, flash. That's really nice.
Yeah, and I mean, he did have the whole, like, green to black thing when his suit would run out of time.
I did like that.
Oh, and then, so, here's another really great thing. Makoto had Elaine use his sword, and that makes me very happy. I just love the handing off of weapons. Too bad they didn't do it like Gokaiger. Like, y'all remember that Gokaiger premiere?
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That was... Gokaiger had so much fun with that.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite things, because it's like, well, why do they even have them? Cause, and it's like, well, because that's what comes with the suit. So, yeah. Not to mention, then you get the thing where they throw them to the other guy, and it's like, oh, man, these guys are really friends. They're good friends. They're crewmates. They trust each other. Boom.
It was so good. Remember that one time Joe fought with five swords?
Yeah.
So good.
I forget how he did it, but he got everyone's sword. Bless his soul.
He had the lines, as I recall.
Yeah, I think it was using ropes.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was nuts. We shall move on before we descend into Gokaiger.
Wait. Him using both guns with one hand.
Let's see. Okay, so all the Gon Misers coming to attack Necrom and Deep Spectre was super cool. I just like the idea that they finally said, like, okay, we're fed up with this guy, with, you know, these guys beating us, so we're just going to go get them all at once. And then it didn't work. So that was cool. And then, like, the concept of the power of Mugen coming from outside of the Gonma system being the reason why he's able to defeat them is pretty neat. It's awesome because, like, they limited themselves in capacity by... It, like, as a way to seek perfection, and Takaru isn't bound by those same things, so he can go beyond them. And I like that they assess him as having an infinite threat level, especially because, like, you know, that's his name. And it's a pretty great pun. And then my last thing is, like, Mugen turns Takaru into a deity of destruction, and that rocks so hard. Watching him assault the fire and liquid Gon Misers was thoroughly pleasing to me.
I really thought Elaine getting back at Onari for the marker prank was cute. Like, I still think this whole joke was kind of funny, and it's harmless. Like, we don't have this internal conflict among our protagonists. Onari isn't distrustful of Elaine. He's not trying to push him out of the group to protect anyone else. Elaine isn't sulking about believing no one likes him and, you know, taking every little thing as a total slight and reason for a hostile conflict. Like, I am more than willing to have characters do, like, kindergarten pranks on each other than have to deal with everyone, like, hating each other and angsting for 20 years. Like, I will take it. I kind of eye-rolled Akari as a hostage, but, you know, it's at least more acceptable than any time Kiriko was kidnapped, because Igor knows he could not take her hostage if she was conscious. And, you know, they didn't make it weird. There were no weird camera shots of her. There was no one carrying her. Like, she was just asleep on the table, totally normal, and they could have made it weird because they have in the past.
Yeah.
Like, we all know it.
It's kind of sad that that is one of the womens. It's like, whoa, they weren't creepy jerks. Amazing. They held themselves back with supreme acts of will.
I mean, it is sad that, you know, we have to point this out as a good thing, but I do think it's worth noting that, you know, yeah, people were making the decision to not creep all over Akari's body.
And it is a deviation from the norm, so it really does make you say, whoa.
Like, remember
some
in
tells
Drive
me, though,
that
her actress would have been just like, try that. You try that on me.
Like, you remember in Drive that dude that kidnapped, like, 8 women for funsies?
Yeah.
You remember that mess?
That was super creepy.
Also, like, that's the thing. Igor also captured a dude.
Yeah.
It's like, they were going hard. It's just like, those are the two humans he has access to. Boom. It's not like, she's so beautiful, I must possess her. It's like, no, it's just, she's there, and I hate her.
She's there, and this is probably the only time I'm going to get to mess with her without her beating the crud out of me.
Again, she doesn't have to. She slaps him, and it's just like, he's destroyed, because manly, tough man, man science, STEM field man. Slap.
Like, he knows he could not do this if she was conscious.
He wouldn't try.
I also love that, you know, after that happens, he's like, oh, well, I'll contact you with how to get them. And Makoto and Elaine, you know, walk out to Takeru like, okay, Igor contacted us, and this is obviously a trap because it's Igor. But, you know, we know where it is, so let's just go. Like, no one questioned what could go wrong, no questioning if it was a trap. Like, obviously. Like, what else is he gonna do? He's not gonna just give them to us. I thought
this
all the
friggin'
Grimm,
guy.
Yeah. Like, I thought all of the Grimm's harrowing cosplays were all pretty cute and silly, and it didn't feel demeaning to me because it didn't actually stop them from doing anything. It was
this
just like,
true.
Oh, I guess he's using Grimm's power because now we're all dressed like Grimm's characters. And a lot of them, really, a lot of these stories do center on girls. So, I don't know. And I thought Takeru's Red Riding Hood was a cute choice because Ghost's whole gimmick is hoods. I thought
that's
was
a very good point.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cute. And Yanagi was having way too much fun doing Onaria's Rapunzel. He was really into it.
I gotta mention something if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
You remember when he would answer the phone, he would always do this little head movement like he was swishing back his hair?
It's a force of habit.
That's so cool, because apparently he had that long hair for a long time.
Oh, God, it's so a great. It's like, that muscle memory has stuck with him.
I hope that is an acting choice. Like, it's not even in the script anywhere. He's just like, no, look, this character I'm playing used to be a really hard kid. Then he got some responsibility when Ryu died and he had to take care of Takeru because they don't have much for social services in Japan, as I understand it. So he took himself seriously. I love it.
I'm so happy about this. Thank you for pointing that out.
That is such a good observation, dude.
I initially thought Akari with the little apple hat was a bit much, but, you know, I guess it keeps it light and silly instead of, look at the girl being pretty in the princess dress. So I kind of reconsidered, and you know what? It's fine. I'll take it.
Yeah. And it could have been, like, look at the girl pretty in the princess dress, or it could have been, she's so bad at being a woman. She looks so uncomfortable in the dress. It's like, I'm glad they didn't do that, too. That would have been suck.
I mean, yeah, that would have also been awful. Like, it put her on the exact same level as the guys, and yep. I'm, you know what, I will accept that, and it's fine. When the Ganmizer start just kind of doing their own thing in all of this, like, Adele has this really freaked out look on his face, where he's like, oh god, have I lost control of them, and I have to just imagine Arya in the back, like, being half concerned about that, but also just kind of laughing at him. Like, that was the only thing I could think of, was Arya like, ha, 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 you screwed up.
You should have started praying.
he looks really scared by the fact that all of them are just like, you know what, let's go kill the Kamen Riders. I thought the whole scene at the Children's Science Museum at the end was really cute. I don't know what kind of experiment the Fukami siblings and Elaine were doing, but I love that, you know, Kanon goes to touch it, and the instant Makoto is like, Kanon, no, don't stick your hand in it, that's dangerous, she immediately grabs Elaine's wrist and shoves his hand into it.
Look, he had
in another bout of passive-aggressive revenge. For the things he has done. Which is absolutely what I'm convinced that she's been doing, like, since he got that new outfit.
Yeah. I think she's probably in with Grandma Fumi about it. She's just No, Grandma, it's a totally styling outfit. Looks so good on him, it's gonna be great.
Yeah. Like, oh yeah, no, he's gonna love this. It's great. It looks so good. This is definitely a thing that people wear ever. I really love the scene of Ryu and all the kids making, like, hand roll sushi or whatever it was that they were making. I thought it was really cute. Like, it was just really sweet, and I'm glad to see Takeru having this really, like, warm, fun, family-oriented memory with his dad and his found siblings and his best friend. And, like, he makes a comment that he hopes everyone gets to eat like that together again. And if this show doesn't end with everyone in the temple around a table eating all of that together, I will be so severely disappointed. And then just Akari saying Takeru fights with emotions confirms this show is a Steven Universe ghost alternate universe.
I'm okay with that. See, now I'm just like, okay, which one's Pearl? Onari, that was easy.
Yeah,
it actually tracks on pretty good. Anyway, I think for me, like, you guys hit so many of the good ones. I'm so frustrated. Thankfully, I butted in on all of them, so it worked. but like, I mostly enjoy how Mugen's big thing is that for all it's this big Uber upgrade, it doesn't like Takeru never like runs into battle with it. Which is a detail I really dig on. They come at him. He deflects, he dodges, and it makes these really lovely close combat moments. And you know, yeah, it still ends with the big CGI fest, but it's just like, whoa. Suddenly, by becoming partially infused with Infinity, he has become an ascended, like, martial artist. And it's like, cool, alright. I'm down, yeah. Which, you know, leads into my second thing, which is, it's nice to see Takeiwa Seiji getting to do some visually interesting stuff in the suit. Because, you know, round about this time in any given series, you kind of are like, okay, well, that's him doing his thing in the suit, and it's nice. I mean, he hasn't got to do some Denno stuff in a while. Because, like, look, again, Denno had the thing where it's one dude in the suit playing four dudes. It was always really amazing to me, but he hasn't got to really get that pep pop interesting stuff going. Except for when he was, oh, what's the lady's name? How am I forgetting?
What show?
When they had the lady icon.
Oh, Himiko.
Oh, Himiko. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Himiko. Thank you. I totally blanked on it, and I'm such a, yeah. But yeah, when he was the Himiko icon, like, he got to do some interesting stuff, because it's like, yes, definitely, you know, doubling down on being feminine, but not being like, lol, girls are silly! Which I still really liked. And then my last thing is just that I just love how Igor continues to be this petty little jerk, and that actually being kind of a threat at the same time. Like, that's a hard balance to pull off, and they strike it quite well in this show. And it's just a good way to cut the intensity of any moment without losing the momentum of the fact that, like, no, he is still an agent of the fascist colonials from, Ganma World, who is definitely going to kill you and is very good at doing so. Which, like, look, you shouldn't be able to have, lol, look at this guy, I can't wait till Akari slaps him again, and also, wow, actually, he's a supervillain, and he's got a death ray, and that's actually a thing you have to worry about, and I really like that.
The closest thing I can think of would be Prince Demond, because, like, he's such a putz,
man, yeah.
But he's a threat, you know, at the same time.
Like, he's absolutely a threat, but also you're like, wow, what a gross obsessive dude. Like, any time he talks about Serenity, it's impossible to take him seriously.
Yeah. Because he just, like, it's animation, but somehow he betrays himself when he's saying one thing, because you know he's thinking the exact opposite in most of the scenes. Anyway, let's go ahead and get into prophecy. I foresee Ryo coming back at the end of the show, as his soul's now wrapped up with Takeru's, and Takeru's exceeding limits left and right, so why not that one, too?
Yeah, go for it. You know what? He brings both his parents back.
Hey,
you know what?
Great.
He just shows up with both of them. He's like, "Hey, Dad, you're alive again, and also I found Mom."
Oh, by the way, here's oh, who's the guy? Jerk from Kiba. How am I forgetting this? I
Jiro,
love this guy.
Otoya.
Otoya, yeah. Here's Otoya. I brought him back from the dead, and suddenly he's a good person. He brought cake for everybody.
And he's gonna play for us.
Yeah, infinite power. By the way, you'd normally have to pay millions of dollars to hear this music. And then he actually plays a second song. I'm just saying.
At this point, I just have to say I'm glad that his ex wouldn't be around to have to deal with him anymore. But still, it's
yeah,
a good notion.
Yeah, but I mean, like, Walter,
she's resting.
Come get him.
That's true. I can just, it's so, no, I know you haven't seen the Kiba movie, but I'm just thinking about their interactions in that movie, and,
I know some things about that movie, and I think I know what you're thinking of.
It's just that poor boy dealing with his dad. Oh, man.
Oh, man, and by now, Wataru's got a kid.
Aww.
That's true. Where do you think Masao got all his crap?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I think about Walter being a dad far more often than he's reasonable.
Look, okay, we're going to have to save this for a writer jump or something. Like, if we ever do a short segment writer jump. But Sono had a revelation for me the other day when we were talking. And she pointed out that Kiva has the same producer as does Kyoryuger and Drive.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the same
that
producer.
That dude who freaking hates women.
What?
Yeah, so now I can't blame Inoue.
Yeah, because like, you know how there's that whole thing in the middle where it's just like,
the
hey.
Slump.
Yeah, well, there's this bit where it's like, okay, why can't the lady be in the suit? Okay, nonsense reason from authority figure. Okay, let's resolve that. Why can't she be in the suit now? Other nonsense reason from authority figure. Fine, I'ma resolve that! Why not now? And like, they finally get the one where it's clearly like, fine, she could put it on once, and it has to be a boy in the suit! And I'm just like, yeah, that's just in a way, like, he wrote the first couple episodes, then he got the first note back from the dude where it's like, make her prettier and have no powers or agency in the plot. And he's just like, challenge accepted. Alright, let's do this. And that's why, and look, he's never worked on a Kamen Rider series since, and I'm just like, maybe it's not that, like, anything to do with Kiva itself, maybe it's just that he took one of their big producers and just flipped in the bird for like, 50 episodes.
Well, I mean, like you said, we don't want to get off on this tangent, but he did do things in the show. When he's forced to do something that he doesn't like to, he'll just do it in a way that... He's like Anno. He'll give you what you want in the worst possible way, and you just have to deal with it and accept it.
Oh, you want an ending for Evangelion that is not the kid is happy because he finally works through his issues? Fine. You want it? You want that? Here you go. End of Eva. What? Anno out.
You know what? I now believe that at the end of Evangelion that Shinji is the audience and Anno is Asuka.
Yeah. Just, geez, you're disgusting. I'm totally happy to believe that is, like, I've always watched Eva and been like, oh, you know, Shinji really feels like that's Anno himself working through some stuff. But I'm happy to go with, like, yeah, at the end he's Asuka. It's like, I'm done with you people. You guys choke me, you scream at me, you throw me around, you take all these wonderful things I did and turn them into sexy calendars and minifigures. You know what? You disgust me.
Oh,
this is making me happy. Okay. we should get back to our predictions, but, like, it's just angry creatives on things are my favorites, except when they're really, really not.
See, angry creatives when they're right.
Yes.
That's the thing. Man, that was a good laugh.
Yeah, that was...
What do you got for prophecy? Sorry. I'm going to mute myself.
I don't know what's absolutely 100% going to happen, but I feel like at some point I would really like it if they dove a little deeper into what Deep Spectre is about. Like, it's all eyes being open too wide and dive too deep. You know, what's down there? Some sort of Death's Head moth god? The great eyes that stare up at the great eye? Come on, y'all, just give me something. Like, I want... His eyes are open too wide and he has dived too deep. Like, I want to know. Can you show me? There's something familiar about these strangers like me.
Like, my initial thought was we see, like, that other Makoto in the preview, and I thought maybe that had something to do with it. But it doesn't seem to. So.
Or it does, we don't know.
Or maybe it does, I don't know, but I'm totally with you on that. Like, I want Deep Spectre, like, I want that icon to have its own sentience, like the other ones, and I just want it to be really angry.
Or scary, or other, like, if it's like the Cthulhu, and it's just like,
I want it to just go around and mess with everyone. I want it to be like an angry 12-year-old just messing with folks.
Man, I want to agree with you guys, but unfortunately, I think it just might be like the shadow of Jungian psychological construction,
that'd
and like
be
he
fine
had to face
too.
That darkness to get that power. You know,
like but I would like him to like face it by like punching it.
Oh, for sure,
it's Kamen Rider. Like,
I don't care what it is in the end because I trust these creatives. I just want them to actually do something with it.
Yeah, you're right. They really
did not do a thing.
I mean, he spoke to Canon when she was an icon all the time, so he should start having conversations with it, at least. That would be cool. Alright, so, we getting on to questions now?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Alright, cool. Let's do this then. So, I'll ask the first question. Did it strike you as odd that Igor was able to overpower the Grim icon, thinking back to how Makoto struggled with Houdini?
I mean, Igor is much more committed to dominance and overpowering things than Makoto. Like, Makoto's good at heart. He just didn't know any other way beside demanding things, because that's, you know, how he was brought up in Ganma World. He was brought up, like, alongside Elaine, so of course he's going to learn that. But he didn't, like, that was his way of asking for help, and Houdini was like, that's not how you ask for help. Do it right.
Or pay the consequences.
Where, like, Igor is fully committed to being a sack of trash, and Grimm, like, can't challenge that. This is what Igor wants, and, like, Igor has the strength to control it, so he's just gonna do it.
Which I think makes sense, like, but for my own part, like, I thought it was also that, like, Grimm at that point is still kind of divided by its internal struggle. Like, Grimm is not itself. It's two feuding parts, so its will is divided, and thus divided, cannot stand against a will that is absolutely sure of what it is doing, even though, like, he's absolutely sure of being a trash man. No, not a trash man. Garbage collectors are, that is a valuable profession. Evil scientists, completely, just, it's not a useful thing. And even
made
like
of trash.
Yes, just human garbage. He should be a giant orange that falls from a zipper from the sky. Okay, you're right. That was a little mean. I'm sorry to the genocidal mad scientist. That was a little harsh, bro. Anyway, sorry. Didn't mean to get dark there.
I think anyway. Yeah, I don't want to. I'm just having fun, so let's not go back there.
Exactly.
I don't want to dive too deep.
That's good. That's good. Oh, I guess what I'm saying is, like, look, that's kind of divided will against surety. Like, that's a nonsense bit of reasoning, but it has a good story rhythm that works with it. So even if they don't explain the mechanism, like, it's poetry, so it works for me.
I like how that's one of your guiding aesthetic. Or, like, principles in storytelling. That's really fun. And it
really
makes sense.
Is. That's one of mine. Yeah.
So, all right. I gotta admit that it kind of did strike me as odd. Like, I know Elaine was able to overpower the three heroic icons that he started with, but then, like, he lost use or control of them when his heart was wavering. Perhaps the key to overpowering an icon is sheer force of will? That rings a little hollow to me for a few reasons. Like, mainly that Makoto and Elaine are both very willful, and they seem more resolved than Igor. But Makoto and Elaine have changed, and that change has come from within at some cost to them. Which I think is like a very willful thing. Like that is a measure of strength, personal strength. Then like Igor, I keep wanting to call him Igor. Anyway, Igor repels
with Dr. Frankenstein.
Yeah, Frankenstein, exactly. But anyway, Igor repels different perspectives and refuses to like entertain them by sheer force of will. So he may be comparable to Makoto and Elaine in that respect. They're just like, you know, dark mirror of each other. But does that mean that Igor was more determined than Makoto at that point, you know, when he couldn't break through Houdini? Perhaps. And I know in my answer to the question, I'm asking a bunch of questions, but that's what you're getting, folks. And, like, I think that's okay for that to be true, that, like, Igor now is stronger than Makoto was then, because Makoto is so much stronger than he was then, now. I know who's on first and what's on second. sorry. I know my thoughts on this are a bit muddled, but, let me close on this by saying that I think Igor was able to control the Grim Icon, kind of like for what Aleph said, that the brothers were fighting and their energies were in like a negative space. So he was able to take advantage of that. Next question. Do you think Elaine was better able to control the Grim Icon because he is, a stronger person than Igor? And when I say the was, I mean, like, in this episode, overall.
I'd use the word better before I'd use the word stronger because, again, Igor is very strongly committed to his ideals. It's just that his ideals are terrible, but he is 100% devoted to his garbage mindset. Elaine is just, I think, a lot more open to the Grimm's help and the things that Grimm can do, which, you know, allows him to use the abilities, whereas Igor is just like, okay, I need to be stronger, fusion is just a cheap trick to make weak gems stronger, so he just shoves it in there and punches someone in the face.
Wait, so does that mean Elaine is Lapis?
Yeah, you know what? That's not far off.
Yeah,
that's actually not too far off.
Igor is a good Jasper. Except, like, it would not be as funny to see Jasper just get whacked.
It was.
Yeah.
It actually was pretty funny just seeing Garnet deck Jasper in the face.
Oh, that was really great, yeah. Anyway, before we get going on another digression.
Does this make Akari two tiny lesbians in a trench coat?
I'm okay with that. Like, it was either that or she's Amethyst, and I'm good for either. I guess my thing is, I wouldn't quite go out from, like, relative measures of strength or were, but I still basically agree with what you were saying, Sono. But it's not even about, for me anyway, it's not even about being harder, better, faster, stronger, but about how Elaine's goals and Grimm's are one and the same at this point. Like, they have a better world, they want to make it, they're going to do it. Igor's standing in the world's way, and as soon as the Grim icons get their stuff together, he gets got. Which, I'm always about Igor getting got, because he's a Nazi scientist, let's punch him.
That is the goal.
I basically already covered a lot of this in my previous answer, but I must state clearly that I don't think the icons will serve somebody based on, like, morality, but upon, like, active volition. Either they consent or can't resist a particular user at the time, and, like, that may be the determining factor in who's able to use them when. I don't know. It's all a mystery to me. Well, that's okay. Third question.
But I feel like consent, like, allows the use of, like, the pen attack.
Mm-hmm.
Where, like, they're gonna get forced to use... If they're put in a thing, they have... Like, their power has to be used. Their power is just taken out of the icon. But working with them, the consent of them, like, agreeing to fight alongside someone allows for things like the pen attack.
Okay.
Which is, you know, kind of where I was going.
I can
but
see.
Y'all are kind of more articulate on this one than me.
I'm going to mull that over, but I like what you're saying. I may have been more articulate, but I didn't understand it, so. last question. When Takeru fought the two Gon Miasers, did his movements and demeanor feel almost predatory to you? Obviously, I picked up on how differently Takeru was performing, but, like, that's kind of how I read it. So, like, if so, what does that say to you?
See, I get where you're coming from, but, like, I wouldn't go as far as to say predatory, but he does give the impression of being way out of their league. I mean, like I was saying before, like, he gives off the impression that he has indeed become partially infused with the infinite, so he doesn't have to flail as much or work as hard, because as you observed, Amit, he is working outside their system. Like, the change for me is not that he's hunting or predatory, it's that he's super direct and he anticipates one of these, I see what you're doing things, and then he just finishes things with these short, direct motions. It's the flashy CG laser blast equivalent of the one-inch punch, only they didn't have a Toku in the suit, because, look, Takaiwa is still Mr. Kamen Rider, but a Toku could have done it. Because he did that, all those nice Bruce Lee sort of moves. Though, look, if he would have just dropped a wata, like, that would have been pretty cool. Look, I'm just saying, like, it was, like I said before, like, I really like that they have these close, up close and personal, like, fist fights with the thing, because it has a gun, I think. Yeah, well, it has the bow, but, like, don't use it, because it's really, it's kind of a kludge. So he just most of the time just, like, slaps dudes. It's like, ooh. But that's me.
I mean, I agree with Aleph on this. Like, he didn't feel predatory to me. He didn't feel like he was hunting them. They weren't threatened by him at all. Like, Takeru as Mugen has these very deliberate motions, but they aren't hunt and kill. It felt more along the lines of, okay, I'm done. We are just going to end this when I get over there. You know, whether that means destroying something or not. And, you know, given what he's up against, he doesn't really have any other options. But he's very non-aggressive in Mugen. He's not non-confrontational, but he's not aggressive. He's very slow and deliberate, and he, like Aleph was saying, like, he knows he has stepped above them. And he just wants them to be gone. Whether they are dead or not, he wants them not here right now before they can hurt someone who can't stand up to them the way he can.
Right. So, like, to me, I still feel, and maybe that'll be tempered a little bit from thinking about more what you guys have said, but, like, it felt a little bit predatory to me. This doesn't put me on edge like Takeru's duel with Sword Mom did, so, like, that's a nice thing. But it definitely feels like he has become death as Mugen.
look, you're not wrong. Like, he is wrecking those dudes.
But it seems ironic that the current emotion he is focusing on is joy while he is so thoroughly demolishing these Gon Miasers who are threatening to effectively murder everyone on the planet. I mean, he's happy to be saving his friends and the world, but it just seems slightly off. So I'll be interested to see, like, if Mugen... I read this in a scan, so spoiler if you can't handle it. It's a soft spoiler. Like, Akari was right. He is going to be the writer of emotion, and I'm thinking over the next arc he'll, like, go through the 6 or 7 recognized emotions, and, like, that'll be a thing. So, I don't know if he's going to be angry or anything else like that, but, like, if this is joyful Mugen, I'm going to be pretty scared to see angry Mugen.
Boy, that would be scary.
Yeah, like, I mean, come on.
This is the power of my infinite rage. My god, they'd be almost... He'd be half as scary as Sono.
Only half, though.
Yeah, look, Sono, I've seen you fight.
And, like, 80% of the time, I am fighting myself.
Yeah. It is a clash of titans.
So.
But yeah, like I think your point about like he's supposed to be focusing on joy, and apparently his joy comes from wrecking evil dudes. Like, wow, are you like Saint Nicholas all of a sudden?
Hey, I feel man, like his joy.
I
it's
heard
more
you
like
were talking some smack at
joy.
The Council of Nicaea. Whack.
I mean, I feel like it's more that his joy gives him like his joy in, you know, helping his friends or whatever else was going on gives him the strength to kick this demigod in the face until it explodes.
yeah, I mean,
I feel like the action he's performing is not where the joy is.
Right.
The joy comes from other things and is put into that action. But, man, like, Tucker just feels emotions so earnestly that he will have a happy memory and start glowing like some magical god. So I'm there with you on something gets him angry enough that he puts all of his rage into an attack. There will be no more god misers. That will be it.
Yeah, I'm really all I'm really hoping now at this point to go back to predictions would just be like him going to them in Mugen form. And just, like, you know, doing the Matrix flex, you know, where, like, reality ripples. Then he just takes off the belt and is like, look, you can go back where you came from. You can be crazy mad gods. That's fine. You aren't going to be hurting any more people. Okay? We have to hurt more people. We are logic robots. Beep boop. Here's the thing. No. And just, like, I just want Tucker to be like, I stand again. Like, he could even do the thing I wanted them to do at the end of Gaim. Like, I would be really bummed if this happened, but, like, if the end of Ghost is, alright, fine, I'm gonna be locked in eternal combat with the 15 God Misers to save all of creation from this version of perfection that relies on oppression and hatred and cruelty and viciousness, fine, I'll do it. It won't be a problem. Because infinite human potential.
That could be great. I mean, like, that's a dark ending, and I don't want that to happen, but...
Well, it's a dark ending, but it's also a hopeful one, because it's yeah. Like, it sucks for him, but it's good for everyone, and then anyway, but it again, that would be a version of Gaim that was not garbage, which is to say, completely not Gaim.
But also Show Aikawa isn't writing this. Like, that's a Show Aikawa
That's true, that is entirely a Showa. Oh, that is such a Show Aikawa ending.
Like, I am thinking of the ending of Blade. And
yeah,
man, like,
but
that's actually
that's
not far off from the ending of Blade.
That's that's very true.
So that's absolutely a Show Aikawa ending. And he unfortunately, and also maybe fortunately, he's not writing this.
We thought he was gonna.
Show
but...
just got more interesting. Yeah, that was so weird. It looked for a very short time that he was gonna do it.
Yeah, but then he announced, "No, I'm doing an anime. It's cool."
Yeah. Well, the thing is, he had announced around the time that copyrights for Ghost were coming out that he was going to be like starting to write something. And since he's been such a prolific toku writer, I think people just assumed until it was like, "No, that's not what I'm doing."
All right.
Yeah.
I do hope that now that, you know, he's done with his anime, he does come back and, you know, maybe do the next Sentai. Or maybe, you know, that Bokenger 10 years after movie. That do that.
That could
Make
be cool.
One of those.
I was just thinking about Akiva 10 years after movie because I really want to see what's going on with Taiga, and it'd be cool to see Watcher's Kid.
I would actually kind of like if a 20 years later one. With, like, his kid ascending to the title. Except you'd have to get the kid who looks like young Atoya. That would be
Yeah,
hard.
Could be difficult.
Anyway.
Yeah, we're gonna...
I mean, you could just do, like, a 30 years after movie and just get Atoya.
Yeah, just say true. It's 30 years after.
Well, they did that for Kyoryuger. It was, like, what, 100 years later or something?
Yeah. I mean, so. With that, it was their grandkids.
Ah.
Like, it was all their grandkids that were at the same age that they were at that point.
That's convenient.
So they like, made it make sense. I did not watch that movie. I just sort of know the plot.
Okay. Don't worry. We're not suspecting you.
I did make it all the way through Kyoryuger, and it was hard.
Yeah, I think that was probably a really good reason to just be like, you know what? No, I made it all the way through Kyoryuger. I don't need to see Gaim. I'm halfway through. I'm done. Nah, it's good. But it could get really good. Then I'll watch it then.
All right. Well, I'm going to stop us before we get stuck in infinite tangents.
We kept getting these really fun. Anyway, shall I take us out?
Sure.
All right. So for Uncommon Cast RX, I'm Aleph.
And I am Amit.
And I'm Sarah.
And we will see you next time.
Oh, by the way, I'm so glad to know that Jonathan is alive. With a PhD, so maybe that's why he's been gone. Oh, okay, candidate, there we go.
Wow.
There you go. That's pretty funny. If only it could always be so simple. I mean, it could. It's just people are dumb, so. All right, well, are we ready? All right, I'll just give it a couple seconds and then do my intro thing.
Yeah, that was nice to find out. Well, he's a PhD candidate, and he's got a girlfriend, so... you know, he's like, look, if he's been hanging out with a pretty girl instead of hanging out with us, I get it. Only one of us is a pretty girl, and I don't think he ever gets to hang out with you, Sono. And I understand you're already taken, so... Oh, no, I thought you said you had a boyfriend. I'm sorry, my bad. Yeah, sorry. Bad one on my head. But, yeah. It's not a thing we... Yeah, we kind of tend to keep our comments to comment writer. Keeping that shit on the DL. Well, you know, look, if you don't feel the need to make it public, I mean, I'm glad that it's not a thing that people needed to explode and, like, sides needed to be taken. That's actually kind of beautiful. Well, people, you know, ego is a hell of a drug. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Appeared out of nowhere. No. I'm not, actually. Did for a while, don't now. Haven't for about a year. Not a big deal. No, it's not something that was really made public when it stopped being a thing. Like, I'm pretty sure, like, people in our friends groups, like, may not have heard for, like, several months. Like, it was just not a thing we made public. Nah. Nah, I mean, it was all just a cool thing. It was just like, okay, this is... not working as a relationship anymore, so now if this isn't a relationship. Okay, now we're friends and moving on with our lives. Yeah, also true. Yes.